Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. Stay ahead of all the big games in the best league in the world, the Premier League. With the latest odds, form guides, expert opinions and more, the fans are the players at Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com, 18 plus, begambleaware.org. T's and C's apply.
As the full-time whistle goes here at the Emirates, Arsenal stop the rot after two defeats in all competitions. They get back to winning ways, but the defeat means that Sean Dyche's side will be staying in the bottom three going into Christmas Day. The final score at the Emirates, Arsenal 3, Burnley 1.
Vardy, 1-0 Leicester. He may not like the system he's playing in, but he loves goals. Chelsea 0, Leicester City 1.
Are we about to see one of the shocks of the season, of the decade? Because it's Manchester City 1, Crystal Palace 3.
Huddersfield Town 1, Southampton 3. And it's Obafemi.
Goal of the vitality, Alex Crook.
Game over, Adrian. Bournemouth 2, 10-man Brighton 0. David Brooks is having quite the afternoon. He's just scored his second of the game.
West Ham 0, Watford 2. Gerard Delafeu has steered one past Lucas Fabianski.
Terrible game here. Newcastle 0, Fulham 0. Only just, well, a handful of chances, I suppose.
Comes to the Lingard, who takes it round the goalkeeper. He'll finish it here. He does finish it here. Jesse Lingard hits the fifth goal of Manchester United's trip to South Wales. And super sub Solskjaer has come in from the cold to help bring a bit of joy to Manchester United again. Jesse Lingard has scored twice. Manchester United have hit five. It is Cardiff 1, Manchester United 5.
It's the Premier League preview show for the Boxing Day action in the Premier League in the 18-19 season. I'm Tom Rennie, and coming up on the show today, we'll look back on the first half of the season, which has seen Liverpool top the tree at Christmas. Man City already losing twice. Man United good again. Isn't that frustrating for all of us fans of other clubs? Yes, it was Cardiff at the weekend, but scoring five for the first time since Fergie left is no mean feat. And we'll talk about the bottom of the table as well. Still anyone's guess as to who's going to be in the Premier League next season. It's the Premier League preview show for Boxing Day. Happy Christmas, everybody. And it's a very happy Christmas to our panel. Let's say hello to the lads. Now, he wasn't here before the West Ham-Watford game. He didn't turn up. He didn't do that show. He was busy out with the lads. Didn't invite me. That's fine. I'm not annoyed about it. But now Watford have gone to London Stadium and committed the robbery, which was the game on Saturday. He's turned up again. It's Talk Sports football editor, my friend and yours, David Walker. You okay, mate?
How can you say it's a robbery?
Because I watched it with my eyes.
Antonio.
From a yard out. If he could score from a yard out, we'd have got something there.
It's not a robbery, is it?
Well, because then you went up there and nicked another goal.
Terrible rubbish finishing.
Rubbish penalty. Smash and grab at the end.
Rubbish penalty.
It was never a penalty.
Are you being serious?
Yeah, not really, mate. Anyway, we'll talk more about Watford West Ham later in the programme. We'll also ask the professionals what they think as well. Let's say hello first to the first time this season to the former Arsenal, Cardiff and Wales fullback Reece Weston, who's joined us. He was at the Arsenal game on Saturday as well, so he's perfectly placed to tell us how Arsenal keep playing so badly and winning games. What's going on, Reece?
It's a great habit, isn't it, to get into?
Is it?
Playing badly and winning, absolutely. Something that West Ham fans should be fully aware of.
And certainly got half of that right.
Yes, absolutely. No, Arsenal are muddling their way through on the back of a couple of defeats. They came back at the weekend and won unconvincingly against Burnley, but they're not bad shape going into the festive period.
Yeah, Burnley in a bit of trouble as well. We'll get into that later in the programme. David Connolly is also here, former West Ham, Leicester, Watford, Feyenoord, Republic of Ireland striker. Was at the Chelsea game and Leicester City victorious at Stamford Bridge for you on Saturday. An incredible result for Leicester, and Chelsea have gone from they could be the title contenders to it's all going wrong for Sarri.
Yep, Chelsea have got the blues, no doubt. They were poor.
That's why he's a pro. Poor. That's why we book him.
That's right. And Leicester were magnificent, I've got to say. Really good away performance.
Right, let's get into the games coming up on Boxing Day. We're going to start with our international feature game at 3 o'clock UK time. Liverpool up against Newcastle United. A 3 o'clock kickoff here in the United Kingdom. And let's talk about Liverpool. Top of the table at Christmas. The last team to be top of the table at Christmas and not win the Premier League were Liverpool when they let it slip 5 years ago. But this is a very, very different Liverpool side. And after the game on Friday night, Reece, let's come to you first on this. I kept seeing things on social media, of course, always a place where you can trust the opinions of people and gauge the world. People talking about Virgil van Dijk being the best defender in world football, Mo Salah being the Premier League's best player, Alisson, what a signing. You know, they went to Wolves, very tough place to go, and they were at their best. Fabinho again with another poor performance in midfield, and yet they won. They keep changing things up. They do everything they kind of tell us you shouldn't keep doing if you're going to be at the top of the table, and they keep on winning. They're looking imperious, aren't they?
Yeah, it's great to see, to be honest with you. You know, Liverpool have come close previously. Jurgen Klopp, I rate so highly. I love his philosophy, the way he manages his players, and he's starting to get the recognition, you know, in this country that I think he deserves. And the fact of the matter is, he's got players that are playing remarkably well. You know, Van Dijk, yeah, it's tongue in cheek when you say he's the best defender in the world, but
not for everyone.
No, rightly so. But the point of the matter is, you know, they're still unbeaten domestically, and to go halfway through the season playing as well as they have, scoring the goals that they have, you know, going to the places they've been to, you know, it's everything's moving in the right direction for Liverpool at the moment. And is this going to be their year? The first time since 1990 that they could potentially win the league.
David Connolly, how's it gone so well for Liverpool for the first half of this season?
Well, there's been a definite gear shift in terms of Mo Salah playing as a nine. You know, now that has meant Firmino's dropped back and, as a 10, which I don't think suits him. I think he's better as a 9. And I thought against Wolves, for example, rather than Keita playing out wide, it might be that Salah shifts there and Firmino goes back to the 9. But actually, you can't argue because he's been amongst the goals, Salah. He's been their main man. I mean, his composure in front of goal has been outstanding. Look, he was suffering effects, I think, from the World Cup. He's recovered from that. And look, they're not scoring the volume of goals that they did last season. That's for sure. You know, they are spreading them around. But obviously, the key thing is at the back. And, you know, can they go one better than the likes of Benitez's team in 08, 09 and Rodgers' team? I think they can. I really do. And the reason is, I think they've got genuine strength and depth, you know, which they didn't have in those days. You know, the bench is just as strong as those that are starting. And when he does rotate in, those players can still do a job. And I think, unlike, say, Mourinho and people like that, his staff, Jurgen Klopp, he thinks, OK, I don't know the answers to everything, so I bring in people that do. His staff is just as strong.
The throwing coach.
Your throwing coach. Yeah. And they're scoring from long throws.
Yeah, and obviously, when they have suffered injuries, which they have, they're able to supplement and bring players in. And the likes of Shaqiri, I mean, you can't argue it's been a terrific signing. They've also got, you know, youngsters getting their chance, Alexander-Arnold and Gomez, and, you know, even the likes of Lovren are coming in, and you know, they don't look any weaker. So they've got real strength in depth. Yes, I think they will go one better. And the team at the top, normally at Christmas, comes good. I think they'll do it.
Are we just in danger a little bit of looking at this result today and seeing that Liverpool top at Christmas by 4 points? It's a great thing for them. But I've heard fans and seen fans today already saying, "That's it, Liverpool won the league."
Yeah,
they've got three games over the Christmas period. Newcastle on Boxing Day at home. Okay, you know, you should expect them to win that one easily. Then they've got Arsenal, and then they've got Man City.
Yeah, which is January 4, January 5, something like that.
Thursday the 3rd of January. You know, those two big games, those two, Arsenal and the City game, you know, could change everything.
I just wonder whether in those games, like Pep, when he came up against Liverpool, he played two holding midfield players and went, you know, I'm going to take a point. I've got a feeling that he might do the same. Because what they've done, they've narrowed even their goal difference against City. He's down about 5 now.
Yeah, it's five.
Not a
yeah.
lot compared to what it was. So, I mean, you know, they're cutting them down everywhere, and obviously they've got that lead. So, I wouldn't be surprised if he takes 3 here. He's content with a point against the likes of Arsenal City.
It does change things, though, right? Being top of the table, being unbeaten, being the side that all of a sudden, top at Christmas, we think they're now going to win the league. Like, everyone you ask, we've done a lot of these shows now, and everyone you ask, who's going to win it? It's still going to be City. It's going to be City. Yeah, I reckon it will be. And you've just said it there, David Connolly, and we've all been hearing it a lot in the last few days after Friday night's game. I think Liverpool might do this. This might be their year, and that changes things, certainly from our perspective outside. But inside the camp as well, Reece, there'll be people there that might what change their approach. They might start feeling that pressure for the first time. And you look at that squad of players. How many actual champions are there? You take Milner out of it, and there's no one there who's ever really won anything.
No, but it's the manager's job to keep people grounded and focused on the job in hand. And you know, you can forgive players for getting carried away. And as I said, you know, to reiterate, to be unbeaten this far in the campaign when the teams around you are so competitive, you know, and again, it creates a different kind of pressure. Seeing Man City slipping up, seeing Chelsea slipping up, you know, it galvanises you as a squad, and you do get the air of invincibility about you. Every time you go on the pitch, you believe you're going to win. And, you know, a four-point gap, the way that Liverpool are playing, you know, they've got every right to start believing that they're good enough to win the league. But Jurgen Klopp's job for me moving forward is to make sure they don't look too far ahead, because, again, you know, it's very difficult to lose sight of the objective sometimes when you're getting, you know, looking, you know, 5-6 games in advance. They've got to win the next game, and they've got to keep the momentum going. And I think Jurgen Klopp, as a manager, is one of the very best at doing that.
I think it makes a really good point there, because only the other day Lovren said, "I think we could possibly be the Invincibles." Now,
did he?
Yes,
I didn't see that.
Yeah. Now
I love Lovren so much. Oh, yeah. I love him.
He's
the best haircut in the world, best defender in the world.
Yeah. Now I wonder.
Most beautiful wife, most talented kids. I love him.
Whether, you know, they would be cautioning him, saying, "Hang on a minute, you know, you're buying into this from the media. Let's just play one game at a time." And I've got no doubt, though, if they get through, say, the Arsenal or the Man City games, I wouldn't put it past them.
You've got to be feeling it, though, and you're like, it's always this take one game as it goes. And maybe you guys want it in the camp, but Dave, from our perspective, I want someone to come. I want James Milner to come out, dullest man in the world, or so the character is, and he comes out and says, "Yeah, we're going to win the league. We're not going to lose a game. We're fantastic." Why don't we get more of that? Because they are.
Well, he's got. I mean, look,
not Milner, maybe.
He's got nothing to gain though by saying that, is he?
Imagine
all he can. He's just
Firmino does
stupid.
It with his teeth. Comes out, yeah. Big smile. But then no one's going to beat
there's
us.
Tom Rennie lurking in the wings, saying, "Ha,
exactly."
That's why I wanted so much.
Yeah. Exactly.
But if I was him, I'd be doing it. Yeah.
I just wonder as well whether, you know, he hasn't dropped one ball here, which is allowing Danny Ings to go. You know. As the season goes on and you need goals, I don't know. I just hope he hasn't, you know, if Salah dips or if someone...
Well, that leads to January, doesn't it? I mean, we're coming up to January now. We're going to be on Boxing Day, 5-6 days away from that window opening. Yeah. Would they spend again, you think, Liverpool? Should they spend again? A striker coming in to support Firmino?
I think they've got enough. They've got Sturridge there if they need him. They've got Origi.
Could you get better than those two? Should they try it? The old Asprilla move?
It'd be difficult to... Look, you can get a lot better than them, but you'd have to pay a lot of money to get any decent striker for the sort of level you need to be playing for Liverpool. I don't think they need to recruit, unless there's a dramatic injury in the next couple of games or something terrible happens to one of the key players. I think they're all set.
They haven't got infinite resources either, Tom. You know what I mean? It's not like they can just go out and spend 100 million quid in January. And again, you've also got to keep the balance of the side you've got. You know, I'm sure we'll move on to Spurs later on, but you look at the other end of the scale, Pochettino's not signed anybody. If you bring players in for the sake of it, it can also have a detrimental effect to what's in the dressing room. And the belief that group of players has got currently, that's taken them as far as they have done, I think they deserve the opportunity to kick on.
Transfers is a lovely segue to Newcastle, who take on Liverpool this weekend. And it might do Newcastle a favour in some ways to not be playing at St James's Park. Another game in front of their own fans against Fulham a couple of days ago. Well, they were dismal. Absolutely dismal. They barely created a chance. Alexander Mitrovic should have scored late on in that game. They find themselves again slipping and sliding down that table. 17 points now from 18 play. That's, 5 points out the relegation zone where Burnley currently sit. I mean, they're going to do, David Connolly, what they always do in these kind of games, what Rafa's shown so many times that he does in these kind of games, and go 11 at the back, no one forward, and try and get something out of it. And that doesn't work, does it?
Well, I don't know. It did against Huddersfield. I think they only had something like 30% possession. They came away with a brilliant win from a fantastic goal built right from their own defensive third all the way through. I think it was a Perez cross on a Rondon finish. I mean, it was a brilliant goal. But
in the best away kit in English football as well. The stripe, right, the Ginola shirt. Oh, yeah. C'est magnifique.
But that's against Huddersfield. Now, so what possession are they going to have against Liverpool? It's going to be, you know, 15-20%. And what can they do with that? I can only see this being a Liverpool victory. And I think Newcastle are in for a really, really tough season.
I completely agree. Absolutely. I can't see anything but a Liverpool win. And, you know, I don't think Newcastle had a shot on target on Saturday at home. You know, you've got Rondon, who's their biggest goal.
Bottom of the league team.
Yeah, well, that's what I mean. You know,
it's staggering, isn't it?
Yeah, you've got Rondon, who's leading the way with 5 goals for them. You know, they've only scored 14 as a team during the course of the entire season. You know, and to go to Anfield, the way Liverpool are playing.
It's Rafa against his former side. He'll want to put on a good performance, won't he?
But, of course he will, yeah. And the only other thing to say is that I'm sure last week you wouldn't have been saying that Crystal Palace were going to go to Manchester City and beat them.
So no, we all said it, mate. Didn't you listen?
You never know, do you? Same with Leicester, you know, beating Chelsea.
You do never know. Let's get on to that. Next up, I want to talk about Man City, who lost again, their second loss in the league this season against Crystal Palace at home. They take on Leicester on Boxing Day. That's next on the preview show. Right, let's talk about Manchester City beaten by a selection of world-class goals as scored by Crystal Palace a few days ago. Firstly, lads, before we get into the game and City and all that, that Andros Townsend goal, I mean, I don't know where you saw it first. We watched it on the studios here at TalkSport and all of us went wild. Like everyone, there's people who even a Man City fan with us watching it, and it's just so good. The technique, the strike, the cleanliness, the goalkeeper making something of it by diving. I mean, if there's a goal of the season better than that, it's going to be what? From the moon? It's going to be a back heel from the halfway line? What are we going to see that's better than that?
Ever hit more as good as that, lads? In training?
David, look at me, by the way.
But what a fantastic goal. What a fantastic win. We'll talk about the Palace perspective in a minute. But what about City? I mean, they threw everything at it. They threw the kitchen sink at it in the end, but couldn't get the goal.
Did he make too many changes? Yeah. Is he putting Stones in midfield? Aguero's on the bench again. De Bruyne's on the bench again. Is he being too clever, trying to overthink it too much?
He's trying to manage his squad, isn't he, effectively? Yeah. But he's got an innate belief in the players he's got around him. And on one hand, I look at it and go, right, fair enough. You're going to get these blips along the way. And, you know, Man City have set the bar so high now that any adverse performance now is a shock, isn't it? You know, and the reality is the Premier League is one of the most unforgiving leagues in the world. Mm. And anybody on any given day can beat anyone. And when it happens to Man City, everyone sits back and goes, well, hang on a second, that's a bit out of the blue. But, you know, it's a tough division, and Guardiola's not invincible. You know, he backs his ethos. You know, he'll never deviate from that. And if he's got players that he feels can do a job in a certain position, he'll give them the opportunity. And you know, Palace played tremendously well and were good value for their win, I thought.
Mm. I think the only chink in their armour is, and in the summer he wanted to sign Jorginho and he didn't get him. Now, I'm not saying Jorginho's the answer, but Chelsea today had three defensive midfielders in Kovacic, Jorginho and Kante. Now, really, City have only got one in Fernandinho. He didn't play. John Stones is filling in, doing a job.
Is it weird that John Stones is in midfield, but Fabian Delph remains at fullback?
Absolutely.
That's odd, isn't it?
It is. And look, I saw him playing that role numerous times. I've seen him in the Cup, and against the likes of Oxford, that's fine. But against Crystal Palace, and they've got some decent players, Premier League players, they really have. I'm not sure. I just wonder whether, for all their creative talent, he tried to get a backup for Fernandinho to play a different way, and he didn't get it. And that might be the one chink of light.
Could have done with Milivojevic in midfield. I mean, he could have probably played that role. And he was great on the day. I think he was the best player on the pitch in the City game. It was fantastic.
Hey, look at Liverpool. They brought also defensive midfield players in as well. They've got more than one. They've got cover. City don't really have that.
I've got to say this stat as well. At least that's often a little bit silly, but I love this one. City lost a Premier League match at 3 p.m. on a Saturday. They played quite a lot of them for the first time since August 2014. That's 36 matches unbeaten in that time slot, which is incredible, an incredible run for anybody. And what a great victory it was for Crystal Palace. What changes then as we look forward to Leicester? Because Gabriel Jesus has been playing up front to varying degrees of success. We've seen the slow reintroduction of Kevin De Bruyne. Came in with about half an hour to go, and Pepper said he'll play kind of when he wants to play. Same kind of thing with Aguero, who was on the bench in this game and came on just after half time for Otamendi, I think, in the game. Do we see those guys start? Do you think we'll see Aguero back? Are we going to see all these big talents in the side against Leicester?
Yeah, absolutely. Look, he's got to respond because there's the 4-point gap there. You know, he has to respond quickly. And Jesus got a couple against Everton, but he hadn't scored in about 11 games. And, you know, there's no doubt he's homesick or whatever it is. But still, I think at home against the likes of Palace, you've got to play your best players. You need to get points on the board, especially, I think, after Liverpool's victory on the Friday night. It put him bang under pressure. He needed to send a signal, play his strongest team. I think it's a bonus for them, De Bruyne's back, because I know they've done terrific without him, but you know, people say, no, they haven't missed him. Well, every team's going to miss a player of De Bruyne's quality, no doubt.
Absolutely, I completely agree. I think, you know, it's an opportunity now for City to send a warning shot and to say, look, we're still very much involved in this, which of course they are on paper. But the reality is, you know, Liverpool now are setting the standards, and Man City and Pep Guardiola have got to respond. And I agree with Dave, you know, there can't be any corners cut. You know, the next result is the most important one from a City perspective, and I think everyone's got to play.
And if you go back to last season, I mean, the points swing is just incredible. I mean, it must be about a 15-point swing compared to where they were last season to this season. I mean, last season, obviously, they're running away with it.
Well, they're still unbeaten, so it's at least six. A couple of draws in there. So it's probably about 7 or 8 or something like that. But it's still a lot of points. Yeah. Listen, I do want to go on to Leicester, as you were at the game, of course, at the weekend. But one final one on Man City. Roy Hodgson, the first English manager to win a Premier League game at the Etihad since. Who's got it? You've got to go back to 2010. Not right. It's a good guess, but it's not right. Anyone else? Quickly.
English manager.
It was in 2010, May 2010, Harry Redknapp.
Wow.
The King of the Jungle. 8 years ago. Incredible. Right, let's talk about Leicester. You're at the game. David Connolly, they beat Chelsea. It always annoys me about Leicester. We've done 2 years of talking about changing the style of play. Do the old style of play. It won the league. And they've done it again. They've done it fantastically.
Yeah, a really good away performance. I thought they were superb from back to front. And Kasper Schmeichel, his delivery, it was Ederson-esque. He was so good with his feet. He was picking players all over the place. Brilliant at the back. The two fullbacks were superb. Ben Chilwell, I think he could play for any side, any of the top teams.
Yeah, been linked with Man United, isn't he, in January?
And Man City. I mean,
Man City, I didn't mean that. Sorry.
He was absolutely outstanding. He had no winger in front of him. He played like a left-back stroke left-winger. He did it all himself. Brilliant. Madison found a bit of space. Lovely assist for Jamie Vardy. Fed on scraps, but when he had the opportunity, he finished it. And it was a consummate, fantastic away performance.
Big win that as well for Claude Puel. Because, you know, the doubters were re-emerging again, weren't they? I think I'm not the only person to have suggested, because of what's happened with Leicester, obviously the focus has not been on the team as much as it would have been otherwise. And there's been murmurs of discontent the last few weeks. You know, Vardy coming out in the week and saying, the manager's style of play doesn't really suit me. Well, he's got a goal today, so that's a perfect response. But that's a huge win for Puel. Gives him some breathing space.
I was worried that we'd need to come back in here on Christmas Eve and redo the show because he'd be gone. I thought if they lost heavy against Chelsea, with everything we've been hearing from, you know, our men up there that have been covering Leicester a lot and all the noises you mentioned, Jamie Vardy, I think that it might have been that close for Claude Puel. And, you know, it is the perfect response. And if they then go on and get victory against Man City, does this end? Because Claude Puel, I mean, it just doesn't seem to be popular. All this doesn't show passion. When they scored that goal in the Carabao Cup midweek, he goes berserk on the sideline. He's got the passion there. He's a good manager. He's proven year on year to do good jobs at two of your former clubs, David Connolly, and yet he just doesn't seem likeable. Has he got Tom Rennie-itis?
Well, I mean,
no one likes him, despite the talent.
He is very visible on the sideline. Now, whether that was deliberate in terms of he never sat down the whole game. Now, I'm not saying this Unai Emery-esque in terms of, you know, Arsene Wenger who was sat down and Emery's on the sideline showing, you know, this is me, and you know the crowd liked that. But he didn't sit down the whole game, and he was up there cajoling his players. And whether that's Tom Rennie-esque, I don't know, but it was Puel-esque. And they were fantastic. I think anything like a point here. If I was him, I'd play almost exactly the same way as I did today. 11 behind the ball, you know, be really hard to break down. And then with our little sprinkling of quality that we've got, see if we can just create one or two openings and take them.
Let's move on. Tottenham up against Bournemouth is 3 o'clock UK time on Saturday. Tottenham Hotspur, Reece, we spoke as we were covering the game between Cardiff and Man U about how close they could be. And you scoffed a few times about Tottenham being the title race. But look, as we go into this weekend, you know, if you get away from Liverpool and Man City, they're still right up there. And, you know, all the stuff about Pochettino and his future and all that sort of stuff. I just wonder whether there might be a meeting in the next couple of weeks. We'll talk about the game in a second, where he says, look, if you want to keep Maurizio Pochettino, this is him speaking in the third person, not going to do the accent, but he would say, give me 200 mil in January, give me another 200 in the summer, and I'll make you champions. Otherwise, surely Tottenham have committed one of the biggest bonehead plays in the history of football. They'd let him go.
I'll counter that. Okay, I'm not suggesting Spurs can't win the league. I'm not suggesting that for a second. But, you know, when you look at, you talk at squad dynamics and you talk about, you know, shopping list in the summer and having an idea of who you want to bring in, I think Pochettino is such that he would much rather sacrifice getting the player he wants rather than upset the dynamic that he's created at Tottenham. And what a story it would be if they could go through a campaign without adding any players to their ranks. You know, I'm not suggesting that's the way they go, but if he wants to do that, how big an achievement that could that be in modern football, where players, you know, where clubs are spending tens of millions of pounds every transfer window, for a club of Tottenham's stature to be able to go through a season without adding to their ranks and to achieve something significant, even finishing the top four, would be an achievement, in my opinion, without signing anybody else. And, you know, what's wrong with that? Effectively, he's got a young squad. He's got a relatively big squad. Why can he not do that? Why does he have to bring players in? And again, if he wins the league with Tottenham, or at least challenges significantly, and he's backed in the summer, you know, as you said, Tom, is there any need for him to leave?
There's a great story in all this because, of course, we're going to do Man United next. There might not be a Man United job for him if Ole Gunnar Solskjaer keeps winning games 5-5 and they kind of release the big dogs and they all came to the fore and were fantastic against Cardiff a couple of days ago. But also, it's against Eddie Howe this game, who everyone basically says, if Pochettino goes, he's the perfect replacement. And the one line from the game at the weekend, which they won easily against Brighton, that kind of stuck with me in his post-match, they said, David Brooks, 2 goals today, a player you've taken from Sheffield United. No one really knew much about him. What do you make of him? And he said, oh, I've been pleasantly surprised. Which I thought was really, it just seemed like a natural deal. He's worked with him. He's developed this talent, but he's sort of given all the credit to the player. And I think that's a lovely way of managing players.
Yeah, I don't know whether his previous experience at Burnley will count against him. You'd like to think it wouldn't. That, you know, time moves on and he's shown he's an amazing manager, Eddie, with not a lot. He's unearthed another diamond from the Championship, Brooks, a bit like Maddison, you know, at Leicester. Whether he's the right man, I don't know, but he's certainly doing a great job.
Yeah, and he was linked with Arsenal at one point, wasn't he? When Wenger's,
yeah, he's got a better job now in Tottenham. He's been linked
when Wenger's
future. Come on, mate, rise to
this.
It's Christmas.
I'm trying to be professional.
It's like Christmas dinner, this, isn't it?
I won't get invited back again, otherwise. No, when he was inadvertently linked, you know, with the Arsenal job a couple of seasons back, I felt at the time it may have been a little bit too soon for him to go in, and the expectation, much like, you know, different you know, set of circumstances, but much like when Moyes went to Man United, you know, it's. To come from Bournemouth, where you are so involved in everything that the club does, to go into an environment where you're expected to win, you know, it may have been a bit soon for him. But I think that Tottenham have got an infrastructure in place now that, you know, yes, Pochettino is the figurehead for that club at the moment. But I don't think it would be such a huge transition for Eddie Howe to step up and manage Tottenham with the support and the young group of players potentially he could work with there. You know, I'd love to see a young English manager given an opportunity at a big club rather than, you know, having to feed off scraps, so to speak, without really being considered for the top jobs. It'll be great to see someone given an opportunity.
And as Roy Hodgson has shown us, English managers can win big games once every decade. Right, I want to move on to Man U against Huddersfield. That's a 3 o'clock UK time kickoff on Boxing Day, and we'll do that next.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. There's a lot more to those 90 minutes than what goes down on the pitch. With the latest odds, form guides and expert opinions, you'll know the score with Ladbrokes. Odds update on Talk Sport with Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com, 18 plus, begambleaware.org, T's and C's apply.
Let's talk Manchester United. The beast has woken from its slumber. And they thrashed Cardiff by 5-1. Reece Weston, you and I were doing that game for TalkSport's International Service on Saturday. And they were well worth their win. Look, they're always going to be better than your former team, Cardiff. Player for player, even under Mourinho, they probably still would have won that game, though, you know, a lot more depressingly in some embarrassing 1-0, I'd imagine. But, you know, the way some of those players expressed themselves. You picked out Pogba during the game. I think I picked out Jesse Lingard several times, despite the obvious cheating for the fourth goal. You know, he was still fantastic across the game. They even had Victor Lindelof running from central defence and running through and playing little passes through to Marcus Rashford, who probably should have scored. You know, that the players are off the lead. He said Solskjaer wanted to make fans happy and they'd be very happy with what they've seen so far.
Yeah, it's It was an impressive performance, absolutely. And I felt there was a noticeable shift in dynamic. When Man United started the game, you could see they were buzzing around, as you would expect with a new manager coming in. But it just seemed the pressure was lifted ever so slightly. And I think, you know, the only thing Solskjaer can do in such a short space of time effectively is just to get the players back on side and get them enjoying their jobs again. You know, get them playing, get them enjoying each other's company, much like Gareth Southgate's done with the national side, is to try and create an environment that the players are happy to be in. And you saw that on Saturday against Cardiff. You know, the third goal, Anthony Martial's third goal, you know, when they picked apart the one touch passing, the movement, the finish, you know, that was a throwback to Man United of old. And again, it has to be taken lightly. And I mean this with the greatest of respect. It was Cardiff, and Cardiff have been struggling. They're playing Huddersfield next. I've seen Huddersfield this season. They'll be difficult to break down because they won't offer anything going forward effectively. Mm. So again, the onus is going to be in United to set the pace of play. But, you know, with Pogba deployed in a slightly more advanced position, he grew in stature and confidence in that Cardiff game. Lingard, Martial, Rashford. Now, these guys, with the right care and attention, can really go and express themselves. And I think, you know, Man United have got an opportunity to really kick on.
Yeah, they have. They've got a great run of games coming up. Huddersfield, as you said, they've got Bournemouth on the 30th. They've got Newcastle,
I think, yeah.
Yep, as well. And you've got Reading in the FA Cup. Mm. So you could easily be looking at a situation where he's won his first five games all comfortably. And, you know, you mentioned it slightly in jest, but it will happen. The talk will be, can this man become the permanent Manchester United manager? I mean, he has got a job. You know, he'd have to resign as manager of Mulder, which obviously he would happily do. But, you know, I mean, Dave, can you see a situation where Solskjaer stays beyond the end of the season?
I can see it, but I don't think it would be the right thing to do. I think if they want the right man for Man United, then they should go all out on the person they think can do the job, not someone who's necessarily out of work or just shoehorned in for a short period. I'd just go in. If it's Pochettino, I'd just go and get him.
Can I ask you both a question from a playing side of things? We're always fascinated by things like this. The new manager bounce. And we're going to talk Southampton later. Ralf Hasenhüttl, two wins already as Southampton manager. What is it like? Now, you haven't got to tell me the clubs, but what is it like when you really didn't like the old manager? And we talk about down tools. We talked about Pogba downing tools in commentary and suddenly picking them up for the game against Cardiff. What kind of release is it where you just don't like your manager and suddenly they're gone and you can suddenly start playing football? I mean, you haven't got to tell us the stories specifically, but it must just be like, wow, I remember this. I used to love this.
I mean, I've heard, for example, the Southampton manager Hasenhüttl say, oh, suddenly there's no one in the treatment room anymore. You know, there's players that suddenly fit. Now, whether that's a sly dig or what, but that can happen. But obviously, you know, whoever's in charge can create an atmosphere where you just don't enjoy going to work every day. You know, you don't want to bump into the manager in the corridor. You don't enjoy the training. He's on at people. He might be on at you, might be on at others. And before you know it, you know, things are just unraveling. So, yes, I have had it at clubs where players don't particularly like the manager. You know, some do, some don't. And, you know, but very rarely is the whole camp happy. However, with United, it seemed like the majority of it was unhappy, and I think only had to be changed. And I think, you know, sometimes you do need a freshen up, whether it's at Southampton, you know, new ideas, new training regime. I think Man United might even be going back to, I think, how training was under Sir Alex. And then I had a former United player as my manager. We basically did five a-sides every day, and the players loved it. You know, now that's fine if you're Man United.
Were you winning?
Yeah, but obviously when you're playing in the big boys league, that's a bit different. But when you've got the players of Man United's calibre, a lot of the time I'm not saying you're keeping them happy like kids, but you know, you don't have time for tactics and laborious training sessions on the training pitch. You want it light, bright, players to get loads of fun, loads of enjoyment out of it. You normally select those that trained well. That was key. You've got to train well to get in the team. And then you let them go and express themselves. And to me, that just seems what Man United and under Solskjaer have done so far.
It's also very difficult to be objective sometimes. When you find yourself in a position where you're not in favour, for example, with a manager, of course, you're not going to like him. You know, it happened to be on more than one occasion, but you know what it does do, you know, when a new manager comes in, you know, adversely to when you've suffered, you know, under the hands of the previous regime, when a new manager comes in, it gives you an opportunity to almost reinvent yourself. You know, so whatever you were perceived as previously, you know, you've got an opportunity to go out and show what you're capable of. You know, whether that's how you conduct yourself around a training ground, you know, how you train, how you do, you know, prehab, you know, whether you're in the gym, that kind of stuff. You can be seen, and you can almost, you know, reinvent your persona and give the manager a decision to make. And I think, you know, as David said, you know, top players don't need to be drilled constantly. They need to enjoy going to work. They need to have an environment that's indicative of expressing themselves. And I think, you know, a regime change at this point of the season for United with Solskjaer, I think that's what he's going to be focusing on.
I think the interesting dynamic of Solskjaer is that obviously he wasn't a regular starter, so he knows what it's like to be on the periphery or on the fringes or not first choice. So I imagine his man management would probably be outstanding for those players that aren't involved or are just on the outskirts in terms of getting involved and how he speaks to them, because he's probably got it from one of the best in Sir Alex, who everyone said, you know, brought him in the office, he spoke to them, you know, keeping that dressing room harmony. So I got a feeling that safe pair of hands, you know, is going to be heavily focused on the man management side of it.
I just wonder as well whether it's now a bit like Rocky V, and Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's like the Tommy Gunn and Sir Alex Ferguson's the Rocky Balboa. He's really pulling all the strings in the background. You know, he's already had a couple of chats to him. You know, five years it's been. They haven't scored five goals in a game in all that time. All of a sudden, Solskjaer's back in. They're playing the Fergie way. They're scoring great goals. And I don't know, this might be a movie in the making, guys. Get Stallone on the blower. I think we can have a real hit. What could we call it? Fergie? Can we call it Fergie? That's a good title, isn't it? We could use that. Mull it over. We'll think about it. Let's talk about Huddersfield Town, because they, you know, they had a little run a few weeks ago. Aaron Moyer, Pritchard pushing forward, creating chances. Moyer's out till February. I think it really showed against Southampton that the lack of creativity they're going forward. Also, mistakes. Terence Kongolo, I really like him as a player, but he made a mistake for one of the goals. Schindler for another. Look, it's a tough, every week's tough for Huddersfield right now. But, you know, we talk about it from the United perspective. But if you're Cardiff and Huddersfield, if you'd have had a Mourinho manual, you might have been like, oh, we might have a chance here. Now it's a bit like, just, you know, put your tin hats on.
They just don't have enough up top, do they? Yeah. They've got, you know, reasonably well organised. They've got a couple of half decent players here and there in midfield, but they've got useless strikers. They have.
He's telling it to me. That was a very me statement. I'm loving this. This is great.
They have, you know, and while that's the case, they're going to be struggling.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. There's nothing more to say on Huddersfield.
They've been linked with Solanke, I think, on loan.
Yeah, good luck with that.
Well, it'd be an improvement, wouldn't he?
Out of the frying pan at the Championship.
You never know. He's never really had a run of games.
Yeah, why is that?
Well, it's because he's been at top clubs, but for Huddersfield, he gets in the team, scores some goals.
We will see. Listen, we've got to move on. Let's talk a bit about Brighton up against Arsenal. Brighton beaten by Bournemouth a couple of days ago. Lewis Dunk sent off, suspended for this one. But of course, we'll start with Arsenal. Reeses, you're with us in the studio today because once again, you know, they picked up a victory. But I mean, I think it's fair to say, I do try and wind you up, obviously, but they weren't at their absolute best a couple of days ago against Burnley, but still managed to win.
I have to be honest with you, with the exception of Liverpool at home and Spurs at home in the league, I haven't seen Arsenal at their best this season. But somehow they're getting results. And, you know, Huddersfield at home, it was an awful game of football. But they come up and they came away with 3 points, Lucas Torreira popping up in the 85th minute. And it wasn't too dissimilar, you know, on Saturday. You know, at the Emirates, it was vitally important that Arsenal bounced back. The result was the most important thing, I think, you know, given the circumstances they found themselves in. But, you know, Burnley, unfortunately, didn't get going until they were two down. And then, you know, Ashley Barnes was doing what he does best, was being an absolute nuisance. He was, you know, barreling into people, making it very, very difficult. Arsenal lost Nacho Monreal, so they had a makeshift back three. Lichtsteiner, Socrates and Xhaka were playing back three in the end. So they got pegged back to 2-1. And then for about 20 minutes, Burnley were knocking on the door. You know, they really caused Arsenal problems. And then Alex Iwobi popped up with a third goal late in proceedings, and it put a gloss on the result. But, you know, it wasn't great by any stretch. And Brighton away is going to be a tough, tough ask for Arsenal. It really is.
Can I ask you about Mesut Ozil? Because he came back in for this one and captained the side, but he's had a few weeks of not being picked, talk about the lack of intensity to his game, so he can't play in certain games. What did he play like, and does he play in this one?
He played all right. He played all right. Again, you know, you talk about big game players. You know, he played against Carabag and he's played against Burnley. You know, it's not the kind of fixtures he signed up for. You know, Arsenal's mercurial talisman. But the point is, you know, he was involved, and at the end of the game, you know, he embraced his teammates. He looked genuinely pleased that you know the result had gone in their favour. And yeah, you know, I would expect him to play again against Brighton, because I think they'll need his guile and creativity. They played Guendouzi, Xhaka, and Elneny in the same midfield, you know, and they had a front three of Lacazette, Aubameyang and Ozil. That balance doesn't work for me personally. But, you know, I think Torreira will come back in because he only had a little cameo performance in the second period. I think Ozil stays in. I think you'll probably see Iwobi come back in as well, potentially. But, yeah, it's going to be a tough, tough game.
What about the Liverpool game? the next one after Brighton. Can you see any hope of Arsenal beating them?
But yeah, you know, the performance at the Emirates was one of the best Arsenal performances I've seen in a long time. Okay, it was 1-1, and I felt that it was probably, you know, on the balance of play, a fair result. But, you know, Arsenal going a goal down and having the character to come back, I haven't seen that for a long, long time for an Arsenal side. But, you know, away at Anfield, the way Liverpool are playing, it's going to be very difficult. It depends on how Unai Emery sets up. He's not shy of making big decisions, you know, and he's not shy of making changes. But I think if Arsenal have any aspirations to infiltrate the top four, they've got to go there and be positive. And they've got to, there's no point in setting up to contain Liverpool, because, you know, Liverpool are so intense in their pressing game, the transition. They're arguably the best in the league, with the exception of maybe Man City. So it'll be a tough, tough ask to get anything from it. But I think Arsenal have got to go there and be positive.
Brighton at the moment, David Conn, look a bit confused, though. I think that they've lost three in a row now. And one week it's Lacadia and Andone. Next week it's Knockart and somebody else. They're changing things up a lot. They're going to be without Lewis Dunk for this one. They lost Duffy a few weeks ago to suspension. Just look a bit of a mess at the moment, Brighton, trying to find the right formula. Why do you think that is?
Yeah, I mean, I've seen Brighton quite a lot. And, you know, they're set up in a very regimented way of 4-2-3-1 at times. You know, very difficult to get enough players to go forward. Some of their signings, I don't think, have worked out. Whether it's Lacadia, who was expensive, but he's barely played due to the
form. Can't trap a ball.
Of Glenn Murray, yeah. But he's in enough game time. Iskadero's been in and out. Jahan backs, they spent a lot of money on. Again, another player from Holland hasn't really played. So he's almost resorted back to the side that he had last season, and is expecting them to do the same again. Don't score enough goals, but that's because they don't want to commit too many players forward. And I think Chris Hughton knows that they're probably not good enough. If they do commit too many players, you know, they're going to be vulnerable back to back. So he likes to keep, you know, two centre-halves, two holding midfield players in front of them and go, you know what, you're not going to break us down. We're not going to score many, but hopefully we don't concede too many either.
Right, listen, we've got to move on. We'll talk about Watford and Chelsea up next, and then the other four Premier League games coming up on Boxing Day and one after as well. Loads of drama in the Premier League and lots to talk about. Let's talk Watford up against Chelsea. 7:30 UK time this one gets underway on Boxing Day. We're going to be on air, by the way, for our listeners outside the UK, from 12 o'clock UK all the way through to 9:30. So you've got 9.5 hours of back-to-back-to-back football.
It's perfect. You can have a little nap, though, can't you?
Yeah, if you want to.
In between, you know, get something on the telly, watch the first ones.
20-minute power nap, come back, put your dinner in the microwave, back for the next game.
Absolutely.
I do want to talk about Chelsea, obviously, but we'll talk about Watford as they're the home team first. David, you were at the game a couple of days ago, the West Ham win. I was covering the Everton game a couple of weeks ago. I think Watford have played very well in this recent run where the results haven't quite been coming, and they kind of scored some great goals against Cardiff the game before, but could easily have got pegged back in that one. I mean, I thought it was a fantastic performance, but offensively is one thing, but defensively, I was really impressed at the weekend, I don't know about you, by Christian Cabaselli, because he's the one who gave away that handball against Everton and cost them. I thought it was a fantastic player.
He's had a few moments this season where he's you know, slightly let the team down. He's been sent off a few times and made a few mistakes, but he's also had a number of performances where he's been superb, particularly the game against Tottenham. I remember in August he was one of the best players on the pitch, and he's got that in him. He's a decent enough mid-table central defender. He'll have some good games, he'll have some bad games. But Watford recently, I was concerned that this was going to happen against West Ham. They seem to create a lot of chances, very good in forward areas, De La Feo, Pereira, Decore linking up really well, but they don't have anyone to be ruthless enough to score the goals. At the moment, it seems we're only ever scoring goal of the season contenders. We're scoring perfect goals. We're not just
plenty of them, though.
You're getting
your value for money at Watford now, aren't you, with the goals?
But they're not getting tap-ins. They're not taking the easy chances. And eventually, that does catch up with you. And that's why they did have that sticky patch where they didn't win in seven. But two wins on the spin now. Good record against Chelsea at Vicarage Road. Beat them 4-1 last season. And with Chelsea not in the best shape at the moment, I think it's winnable for Watford.
David Connolly, they're going to go at Chelsea, aren't they, here?
Oh, yeah, I think so. I mean, I agree. I think that at the back, they've done superb. I love the two full-backs. I think Firmino and Holabas are excellent.
Holabas is unbelievable, actually. He's, he's 34. He's in great condition.
Is he 34? I didn't know that.
Yeah, he is. He's, you know, he's. I think he's been involved in more goals in terms of scoring and assisting than any other defender in the league. He's one of the most underrated players in the league.
Yeah, he is superb. That's fair. My only worry for them is similar, is scoring goals. You know, they if they're relying on Delafeu, but I think he's been a terrific sign, but he's not a natural front man. Dini
doesn't shoot as well, Delafeu. He beats five people, then does a pass backwards.
Well, he should be playing him out wide, I think. Yeah. He's been playing him up front, but they had Ken Semmer on the right against West Ham, who doesn't have a right foot. Every time he got in a position, he just wanted to cut in. He was, you know, couldn't kick the ball with his right foot. And, you know, if it's Delafeu out there, like he did against Man City, he'll put a good ball in.
I think, look, they sold Richarlison, which I think was a good deal, but they kept Doucouré, I think, was an even better deal. I mean, I think he's just fantastic midfield player.
Let's go to Chelsea. Of course, you were at the game, David Connolly. We talked the Leicester perspective earlier. Maurizio Sarri, after the game, and now he does have some interesting phrases, English as a second language and all that, he said his players reacted with mental confusion after Jamie Vardy scored the goal for Leicester. What does that mean? And were they any good in the game?
I mean, no. I mean, what Sarri said was that basically they were good for 55 minutes till the goal went in. Then obviously the wheels came off, which they did. I mean, they're all over the place. It looked like they were going to concede. Now, it looked like they actually didn't think they were going to get back in the game. Hazard played as a false nine, but at times he received it and he let the ball go, thinking there was a forward behind him. He much favours playing out wide on the left. He naturally drifted out there. But they've got a couple of holes, you know, in their setup, which I think, you know, people might be able to break down. So, you know, Leicester defended really, really deep and just tried to hit him on the counter with pace, and it worked ever so well. They didn't really win that much at the back. Rudiger was weak aerially. Even the likes of Ben Chilwell was out jumping him. And they ran out of ideas. They really did. They brought Giroud on and then just hit hopeful balls in the box, which were food and drink. So, I don't know, I can see that Watford will really fancy themselves, that as long as they're hard to break down and they defend resolutely, that maybe Chelsea will just run out of what to do next.
Just finally, Giroud back up front for this game. Morata, false nine continues. Morata might be back in the squad, but I doubt he's going to start the game.
I think they need a central striker, particularly against Watford, someone a big, physical, and just take some of that burden off Hazard and maybe shift him back out wide.
Let's move on. Fulham against Wolves is our early game on Boxing Day, 12:30 UK time. Reece, Fulham kept a clean sheet against Newcastle. I mean, that's kind of got under the radar a bit because Newcastle again couldn't score, but, you know, they've made gradual improvements against West Ham. They did well going forward, but made mistakes at the back. Ranieri said, right, don't concede a goal, and they didn't.
No, they didn't, but Newcastle didn't have a shot on target, which would help.
But that might be because of good defending.
It may well have been. It will, but listen,
I mean, it wasn't.
Ranieri's been brought in for one reason and one reason only, and that's to keep Fulham in the Premier League. And, you know, he will know better than any of us around this table how he wants to go about doing that. And effectively, you know, if you're going to be successful, you've got to have a strong platform to build from, and, you know, not conceding gives you a starting point, doesn't it? You know, there's a lot to remedy moving beyond that, but the reality is, you know, if anyone can change Fulham's fortunes, then Ranieri can, I think. And
he's got to win a game, though, isn't he?
Absolutely.
Obviously. Yeah. Where's the win coming from?
Yeah, it's going to be a challenge, absolutely. But, you know, it has to start quickly. But, you know, there's all the stats that will tell you about teams being bottom of the league and so on and so forth. But, you know, it has to change very, very quickly.
I think one thing in their favour, or to give them hope rather, is that I think you are going to have quite a low points total needed to stay up this season.
I think you're absolutely right. Look at Newcastle now at the halfway point of 16. That gets them to 32. And that would be safety, kind of be mid-table. You know, Burnley are in the bottom three right now on 12. That's 24 points. 30 points is going to keep you up. Yeah. If you look at the current trend of it. And, you know, I think that's something that they can probably achieve for them with the goals they can score. But who knows? Who knows? Wolves certainly are going to stay up. They might be in the top half as well. Great performance for them against Liverpool on Friday night. They found themselves temporarily seventh. I think they're back down to eighth now with the other results. And they're back down to tenth from the weekend. Yeah. But they are certainly going to play some football against Fulham. Could be tough there for Claudio Ranieri. Let's move on and talk Crystal Palace. Couldn't score a goal. We've done so many of these shows now, and every week it becomes like, if they had a striker, they'd be a good team if they could score goals. Well, you don't need to worry about a striker if you score from 40 yards. We mentioned Andros Townsend earlier, but some of the football they played against Man City as well, they weren't afraid of Man City. They've got a game against Cardiff coming up on Saturday, Boxing Day, at 3 o'clock. It's ingrained in my mind, Saturday at 3 o'clock. And they'll fancy this, won't they? They'll be showboating, they'll be getting on the front foot, they'll be giving it to Zaha, they'll be giving it to old Schluppers, giving it to Townsend. This could be a big win, this. You'd want to play Cardiff, wouldn't you, if you were Palace right now?
Yeah, I'm sure looking forward to playing Cardiff. I'm not sure they'll be using the analogies you were using just there, to be honest with you.
Flicks and tricks.
No, that's not Roy, is it? That's not Roy.
No, yeah, okay.
No, but no, I think they should take huge confidence from their win at the weekend over Man City. Why wouldn't they? And the goals were sensational, absolutely, but it was the performance, more importantly, that was so impressive. And they have to build on that. Going back to Selhurst Park, they won't go back there and think, oh, it's only Cardiff. You know, what an opportunity it is. You know, six points from those two fixtures would be an amazing return at this time of year.
And also, I think they won against Leicester without Zaha, which showed they could do it. You know, obviously back
another screamer, wasn't it?
Yeah. So I think I'm pleased for Roy because, you know, I know he's not great when he does his press conferences and, you know, he doesn't endear himself at times, but it's good to see him picking up wins. And, you know, you want to see him doing well. He's an old-timer, you know, and good to see him picking up points.
Reece, briefly on Cardiff, of course, you played for the club many times and you were covering them at the weekend. Of course, Man U, you've got to take that equation out of it. They weren't good, were they? They didn't play any good football. There were so many issues with the way they were trying to play, and someone get the right back back at right back, and they got a centre-half playing at right back. It made no sense.
No, it wasn't great. I think they may have been overawed by the occasion, to be honest with you, at the weekend playing Man United in Solskjaer's first game.
It's so early as well.
Yeah, you know, absolutely. Honestly. And to be honest with you, they didn't offer a goal threat. I mean, Josh Murphy was decent on the left-hand side. Hoylett was very quiet by his standards. You know, they're an industrious side. You know, they've got to all be at it to have a chance to compete in the Premier League. And they haven't won away from home all season. And I can't see that changing against Palace, to be honest with you. I think Palace will certainly have their towers up after the weekend. And you know, if Cardiff can get a point, I think that'll be a decent return for them at this stage. You know, I just can't see where the goals are going to come from. No. They seem so blunt in attack. You know,
they're going to be active in January, I think.
They have to be. Yeah. But who are they going to get, though? That's the problem. You know,
so they've already got four of the same player, haven't they? And Kadeem Harris and Bobby Reid and Mendes Lang and Junior Hoylett and Josh Murphy.
Well, they were after Deeney in the summer. And I believe that actually they weren't far away from getting him. But financially, the deal broke down. So I don't know if that tells you what sort of player.
Yeah, well, you
they
can
might
tell
be
what they need.
For. Yeah,
Andy Carroll don't do much these days. I'll drive in there. Let's move on to Burnley up against Everton. Burnley in the bottom three, another couple of straight losses for them. Up against an Everton side in action on Sunday against Tottenham. They're a kind of football playing team. They're trying to change the way they do stuff, and they've got a Burnley team here who still seem, Reece, you watched them at the weekend, they still seem confused, don't they? They're not putting enough high balls in the box, but they're still doing too many high balls to be considered a side that plays another way. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I get what you're saying. There seems, you know, the Sean Dyche's teams usually have a distinct identity, but you know, it took them to go two goals down against Arsenal the weekend to really kind of think, hang on a second, what are we doing here?
Why are they conceding so many goals? It's not like them, is it, from
know.
The last two seasons?
Same against Newcastle, same against West Ham.
They've got, you know, on paper, they've got good pedigree.
Exactly.
You know, James Tarkowski's a full international.
Yeah.
You know, it's... I don't know. I think it's just a distinct lack of confidence at the moment. Mm. But you know, they beat Arsenal up. You know, when they pegged Arsenal back to 2-1 at the weekend, Ashley Barnes getting on the score sheet. And, you know, they then decided, well, actually, getting the ball into the box, playing the ball longer earlier is to our strengths. And you know, they were so good at picking up second, third, fourth balls. You know, when the balls are dropping in the midfield areas, they were on the front foot. They wouldn't let Arsenal get into any rhythm, and that's what's made them successful previously. But for whatever reason, you know, I don't know whether it's slight delusions of grandeur, whether they want to try and mix things up a little bit to try and be a bit more creative. But the reality is, if they don't fix up quickly, you know, it's a slippery slope downwards. And they need to get on the winning trail very, very quickly. I know it sounds very basic, but I'm not sure how they're going to do that playing the way they're playing at the moment.
And I think they've got big games coming up. West Ham, Huddersfield, Fulham. Games that really need to take points from. Otherwise, you know, in the form they're in, I think it's one win in 11. Yeah, that's relegation form.
Yeah, and won't be easy against Everton on Saturday. Every time on Boxing Day. It's Boxing Day! On Boxing Day in a couple of days. One final game not happening on Boxing Day. Thursday, 7:45 UK time kickoff. Southampton against West Ham. Mark Hughes won three games as Southampton manager. Ralph Hasenhüttl. Ralph Rabbit Hutch. It's so fun to say. It feels like it should be in a Christmas song. I don't know why. But he's already won two, David Connolly. And, you know, Nathan Redmond, we've spoken about him a lot as a player who can beat four or five players and can't shoot. You see this first goal he scored against Huddersfield. It's fantastic. He's just given him a little bit of X factor. And also, they just look a bit like we talked about Man United earlier. They're trying. I know that's really simplistic and that's the way we see it. But they look to me like they're trying harder.
Well, look, they've got, what, 6 goals in 2 games? I mean, the turnaround's incredible. I mean, some of the deliveries in the box against Arsenal were just out of this world, sensational, and the finishes were fantastic. The likes of Matty Target, you know, I mean, just brilliant. He's got them playing the back three, you know, two nice creative players, the likes of Armstrong Redmond in behind his lone front man. He's got his subs coming off the bench and having a real impact, whether it's Austin, for example, coming off and nicking a goal. And it's great because then you get to see Charlie Austin being interviewed after.
Changing the rules of the game one interview at a time. It's going to be tough for West Ham. We're a few days away from this game, but for West Ham, 4 straight victories followed by the loss against Watford. I think it'd be great to get those 4 straight wins. I've said this about West Ham all season. I think they're better than the bottom half and they're not as good as the top half. Anyone who's going to finish above them, like Watford probably will, or Wolves, they'll lose. Anyone who's going to finish below them, I think they'll probably beat. I think Southampton are right on that line, a bit like Watford are. I think it's not a great time to play Southampton, but West Ham got to get some players back. They'll be absolutely fine this season, no doubt about that. 35 to 40 points, but they need to get some players back, don't they?
Who are you trying to convince here? You're not looking
convinced. No, I'm convinced. What they got? 22, 23 points at this stage, and Arnautović might be back for this one.
24 points, actually.
You're only going to need, as we discussed, another 7 to be safe. So, and he'll be all right. But it's,
that's the spirit.
Got to get some play. I mean, it could be a better season, but
Hernandez stuck on 49 Premier League goals.
Yeah, I don't lose any sleep over having Hernandez, mate. I mean, Arnautović comes back, we'll all be happy.
You've got McMessie, though, haven't you, in Snodgrass?
Yeah, he's played very, very well. He's put some lovely crosses over, but, I mean, without those first-team talents, I think it might be a mid-table season, but I'll take it. It's not embarrassing. I'm all right. I'm happy. Anyway, anything to say on that, Dave? West Ham?
Well, I just think for the money invested, I'm sure you'd be expecting better than, you know...
Yeah, if they ever played.
Top 10, you know...
If those players ever played, I'd be well happy. Yeah. But apart from Anderson, everyone's been injured all year.
Yeah.
Where are they all?
Yeah.
Where is Wilshere? Where is Arnautović? Where is Lanzini?
Yarmolenko.
Yeah. Where is Yarmolenko? We signed them all and they'll rapidly
went
injured.
Off injured.
Bring back the ginger Pele, I say.
Yeah. We ain't got to pay him. That's quite handy. That's not bad going from the ginger Messi. Anyway, are you ginger? Kind of.
Well, it's controversial.
Well, it's a red room.
There's a reddish hue.
There's a reddish hue in here.
It's warm in here as well.
And there's red lights.
And red lights.
And it's Christmas.
And it's Christmas.
And it's the perfect colour for it. Listen, we're out of time. That's the show. Thanks, everybody, for coming in on Christmas. Have a lovely festive period, everybody. That's the room and indeed the audience. And we're going to go out with a song. Everybody, snow is falling all around us. Liverpool are top of the league. Man City champions, but they're chasing. Merry Christmas, everyone. See you next time.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. The latest odds? We set them. Form guides? We've got them. Expert opinions? We share them. The best fans in the world deserve the best. Be match day ready before the whistle blows with Ladbrokes. Odds update on Talk Sport with Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com. 18 plus. BeGambleAware.org. T's and C's apply.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.